The Recipes for Life podcast is a conversation about my favorite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. If you would like to become a qualified health coach, then the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, or IIN for short, can help you achieve your goals. I completed their health coaching course many years ago, which has been one of the catalysts for my own journey into what I now love to do, which is to help people achieve greater health through the sharing of information through my books, seminars, podcasts, TV shows and films. I recommend IIN for anyone wishing to pursue a career in the health coaching and wellness space. IIN is a one-year course, so that if you're a full-time worker, busy parent, or wherever you are in your life, it is flexible enough so you'll be able to complete all the required curriculum. Please see the link included in the podcast show notes or my website to access the free sample class and first module of their program. This will give you a great taste of the format as well as the structure, and you can also utilize my special discount that I can offer you if you decide to sign up. Make sure you tell the admissions team that you're part of the Pete Evans Tuition Savings to claim your very substantial discount. Please visit integrativenutrition.com or email admissions@integrativenutrition.com. Wade Lightheart is the co-founder of Bioptimizers. He's a 3-time Canadian natural bodybuilding champion and is one of the world's premier authorities on natural nutrition and training methods. Having majored in sports science at the University of New Brunswick, he has authored numerous books on health, nutrition, and exercise, which have sold in over 80 countries. Wade is sought out by athletes and high-performance-orientated individuals worldwide for his advice on how to optimize their health and fitness levels. Matt Gallant is the CEO of Bioptimizers and has a bachelor's degree in kinesiology. He's been a strength and conditioning coach for multiple pro athletes, a self-defense instructor, and has over 10 years' experience formulating supplements. To find out more about Matt and Wade, go to their website, bioptimizers.com. That's bioptimizers.com. Wade and Matt, thank you so much for being a part of our podcast, and also thanks for all the work that you've done on understanding enzymes, probiotics, and I've been taking your product now for the last few weeks, and it feels amazing, so thank you for that. How are you today, anyway, fellas?
We're great.
Yeah, feeling really blessed and happy and grateful to be here.
Oh, fantastic. I want this podcast, or my intention for this podcast is basically to give a overview of how our digestion works or our digestive system works. And from start to finish, basically from the time we actually think about eating food to the end result and what happens in between that, all of the processes, because I think a lot of people just don't really give it too much thought about what they're eating and how the body utilizes the food that we consume. So, and why we may need to supplement with enzymes and also probiotics and the different products that are out there that you're supporting and have created. So do you mind taking us through digestion 101? And I guess it probably starts when we start thinking about food. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, and we think about food a lot. I think, especially, of course, people, I think, spend a large part of their time throughout history looking for food, thinking about food and finding better ways to make food. One meme that's out there that I think is a misnomer, and that is you are what you eat. Hmm. And I would say that one step beyond that, you're more than what you eat. You are what you are able to eat, digest, absorb, and utilize. And also what you're able to eliminate is a part of that as well. Hmm. And so there are basically 5 stages to digestion. And unfortunately, most people, by the time they're 40, have at least one of these stages that's been compromised, and oftentimes it's several. And ultimately that leads to a lot of conditions down the road, you know, disease and things like that, all sorts of degenerative conditions, inflammatory responses, just, and plus general uncomfortability. So if I'll take you through those five stages really briefly, and then we can expand or dive in and go in a lot of different directions based on what you want. So of course, as you said, food is, you start by thinking of it. Let's go to the mechanics. Once you bring the food into your mouth, of course, you start chewing it and your body releases a little bit of pitolin in the mouth, which starts to break down some carbohydrates. And then the food goes into the esophagus and down into the upper cardiac portion of the stomach. That's the top part of the stomach. Now, you've got about 30 to 60 minutes before hydrochloric acid is going to start coming in. So a lot of people think that there's this big bowl of acid sitting in your stomach all the time. That's not correct. Your body actually starts to break down the food by the enzymes that are present in the food. So all species out, you know, any other species on the planet other than humans eats their food in a raw state. Like lions eat zebras. They eat it in a raw. They eat the entrails first where the enzymes and probiotics are, and then they get the zebra. A cow would go eat grass and would get the live enzymes that are present in the grass. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing with humans is that we tend to cook our food. There's a lot of benefits to cooking food. We get more calories. We can store it better. There's a lot of different flavors and tastes. And so I'm not here to be against cooking the food. The challenge is when you heat food over 114 degrees, you destroy all the enzymes. Now, enzymes are responsible for thinking, blinking, and 25,000 different processes in your body. But more importantly, they're designed to break down the food that you eat. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have them, what happens is your body has to produce its own enzymes. We'll get to that in a minute. But the bottom line is that 30 to 60 minutes when the enzymes are supposed to be breaking down the food, it's not happening. And then the hydrochloric acid comes in, which is oftentimes called HCl. And that is designed to disinfect the food, to change the pH that will activate some enzymes and deactivate others. And it also serves as a big part of your immune system by donating electrons. So I won't get into all the mechanics of that. Once that's happened, so you have the churning of the stomach and you have all the peristaltic contractions, that food will exit the stomach and your body will release what's called bicarbonate buffers, but that's just a fancy name for alkaline minerals, which will bring the pH of that highly acidic food chyme back to a level as it goes into the intestinal tract. And at this stage, this is where the probiotics start breaking down the food and carrying it over the intestinal tract and then delivering it to your blood system and off to your organs, liver, and all that sort of stuff. And then the final piece of the digestive process is you get peristaltic contractions and you remove the waste out of your system, what you don't use or what's not available. So to simplify it, I would say that enzymes are like cutting the grass and probiotics are like mulching the grass. And those are the two critical factors. And also the level of hydrochloric acid that you have inside the body is also for people that get gas and indigestion and even acid reflux are caused by not having enough hydrochloric acid.
Mm. Thank you so much for that definition. So let's break it down into each individual part. So once if you say we cook the food and we're losing the enzymes in there that help to break down the food and do its job, what are the solutions for this? And what have you, how did you come about creating what you've got now as your enzymes to have a supplement to help break this down? How did that come about?
Well, you know, it happens for the same reason that most people discover something. I messed up my own digestion. I was a competitive bodybuilder competing at the Mr. Universe contest. And after the contest, I gained 42 pounds of fat and water because I'd blown out my digestion from excessive use of whey protein products and things like that. And so I met a doctor, and this doctor, I said, what happened? I'm doing everything right. I'm a top level trainer for 16 years. I've got a Spartan like diet. I'm supposed to be eating everything they tell you to do and everything, but something went wrong. And he said, Wade, you learned to build the body from the outside in. You didn't learn how to build the body from the inside out, and you've compromised your digestive system. I'm like, okay, well, what do I need to do? And he says, well, he explained the exact process that I just shared with you. You need to make sure you get enough enzymes and probiotics and stuff. And I started using it. And in 6 months, I made a complete recovery. So then Matt and I, of course, being, you know, performance optimizers as we are, we both had a background as personal trainers and nutritionists and human performance consultants. We decided, well, how can we make this better? How can we improve this? How can we really dive into this? And we've literally spent the last 15 years developing specific formulations that address everything from acid reflux to inflammatory protein responses from milk or from gluten products and low acidic levels in people, and also specific probiotics, patented probiotic strains that are proven effective across the board. It's kind of the things that we've done.
So there's different types of enzymes that produce different effects. And what happens when you eat is your brain recognizes what you're eating. For example, if you're eating an apple, it'll tell the brain, hey, we need some amylase to break down the fructose. Or if you're eating bread, we need some amylase. If you're eating protein, your body's going to begin producing more protease. But as Wade alluded to earlier, the challenge is when you get past 30 and is progressive, your body has less and less enzymes in its enzymatic bank account, if you will. And that's where supplementing with enzymes is very effective. And when Wade and I were working on let's create something better, we felt that the big opportunity was to add more protease than anyone else had added before. Because, you know, your body really is built and maintained with amino acids, whether it's your hair, your nails, your organs, your skin, your brain, tissue, your neurotransmitters, everything is built with amino acids. And one of the things that you can see as people get older, and you know, you can see the skin starts falling apart, or they lose muscle mass every year. We know that's a fact. We believe a lot of it's just a lack of amino acids because they're not breaking down the protein that they're eating into aminos. And Wade can elaborate. I mean, Wade was not consuming a lot of protein, and he was winning natural bodybuilding titles because of the enzymes.
Yeah, can you explain that to us, please, Wade?
Yeah, well, basically what happened is, what's really interesting is Matt and I have completely opposite dietary choices, right? He's more of a keto guy and I'm more of a complete plant-based guy. And we developed formulations that could address the dietary choices that people made. And one of the things for me was, it was a real challenge for me to get enough protein to build muscle in a competitive level. There was virtually no plant-based proteins at the time. And what was available, you know, tasted like garbage. So I needed to find a way to get more protein out of what I was consuming, because I was only eating about 75 to 85 grams of protein a day, where my competitors would be consuming like 250 grams. Hmm. And so we developed this enzyme formula that allowed me to virtually extract more amino acids, which is what you need out of protein. You don't need the protein. You need the amino acid that it's built out of, than probably my competitors were getting by consuming 250 grams. And that has a lot of benefits that correlated into the regular world by what Matt's mentioned. You know, less degradation of the skin, improved mood enhancement, because it can make the polypeptide chains that make your brain function properly. And of course, awesome number twos every day, which is a topic that a lot of people struggle with, right?
Hey, everybody's happy when they do a good poop. I tell you what, like, I don't know about other.
it's a good win, right?
Yeah.
You know, a good friend of mine, he's 76, and he began taking Masszymes, our enzyme formula, and he got off of antidepressants. And, you know, it's not because there's any drug-like effect to our enzymes. It's just simply his body was not producing the neurotransmitters his brain needed to feel good. So as soon as he started breaking down the protein to aminos, he just didn't need the meds anymore. So that's a testament to the power of good enzymes.
Well, you've got the gut-brain barrier, I guess, that demonstrates the power that our gut has over our whole system. Obviously, it's a second brain, and I want to delve into that a little bit more. But Wade, I'm interested because you said something there that has triggered a thought for me. You said you weren't eating as much protein as other people, but by taking the enzymes, you said that you could convert them into the amino acids better than people eating more protein. So my question to you is, if you have your enough enzymes or the enzymes are working properly, does that mean you eat less overall, or how does this work?
Great question. First and foremost, I think it's important to note that undigested proteins are probably one of the biggest sources of toxicity. Number one, because they feed bad bacteria, which produce a variety of neurotoxins. So if you're waking up with brain fog in the morning, which a lot of people do, there's a good chance that you have a disproportionate amount of undigested protein, which is feeding bad bacteria, which is throwing off what's called the microbiome, your gut flora and stuff. And so some people solve it by going on very restrictive diets, and those work for a period of time. But who wants to do that? I mean, everybody would like to eat the food that they like to eat and have a good time and break it down. And oftentimes, if people in their 20s and 30s, they'll say, hey, I can eat anything. By the time they hit 40s and 50s, their favorite foods they can't enjoy anymore because they're not able to break those foods down. So your body creates some sort of back level response. And so what I mean by that, and we go right back to the first thing I said, and that was, you're not what you eat. You are what you are able to digest, absorb, and utilize. And by improving my ability to break down and digest the food, I didn't need to eat as much protein. And that is true. I mean, I would say that for a lot of cases, I can get away with eating a lot less food without having the degradation of nutrient absorption. I'm able to get more out of what I eat. But on the other side of the equation, we do strategic food spiking, which is like one day a week, Matt and I go hog wild and we have all of our favorite foods. So we'll do calorie deprivation for most of the week. And then we have a big spike day where we go out and have the, you know, the craziest, most fun, tastiest dishes that you could love. And we enjoy them, but we're able to digest them. We don't get the bloating. We don't get the gas. We don't have the pain. We don't feel bad about the dinner, and we can consume more of the foods that we love. So we've learned over the course of 15 years how to use the enzyme formulations in a strategic way so that we can get more out of life, because we both believe that health shouldn't be about restriction. It should be about increasing your options, not lessening them.
I really like the analogy and the philosophy behind that as well. I do have a question that I'm curious about, because you talked about when we start to eat our foods, or the different enzymes are activated, whether it's to do with protein or carbohydrate or the fats that we consume. So a question for you is, and it's been something on my mind over the last few years, because I've been I'm a chef by trade, and I love creating recipes. Mm-hmm. And some of the recipes are really simple, and other ones are quite complex and complicated. And I look at dishes from around the world, say a curry from India, for say, and some of those recipes have 30 ingredients in them. But then I look at a dish like sashimi, where it's basically one ingredient. It's sliced raw fish, maybe with a little dipping sauce. So does the amount of different ingredients in a particular dish, is it more, I guess, I won't say toxic, but is it more of a load for the body to deal with than eating one type of food in one sitting?
Yeah, I would believe that would be true. I just got back from India. And, you know, one of the things that I observed, and of course, India has a rich, I would say, gastrointestinal history. And what I mean by that is, it's a large country and food is a big part of the culture. And there's a lot of Ayurvedic philosophy about eating for different body types and combining a wide variety of spices. Of course, you know, North America was discovered by, you know, Western countries trying to find all these spices that were common in India for literally thousands of years. And so they've got a lot more history working with the different tastes and flavors and all the science that they've developed around it in the body. But what I have noticed in India is there's a disproportionate amount of what I would say digestive related illnesses. You know, and it's obvious just by walking around and seeing the population. I'm a big fan of the Indian culture, and I have a lot of friends who are Indian, and almost all of them are overweight, and almost all of them have digestive health issues. And a large part is because they are putting an extra stress on their systems because of such a rich and robust and sophisticated palate. The more sophisticated the palate is, I think, the more likely you're going to choose a variety of flavors and textures and tastes. And that does put a strain on the body. And so if you're going to eat that way, why not make sure that the machine can enhance that process and absorb and utilize that better? So I think you just accelerate the degeneration faster on those type of diets. And of course, if you look historically, the Japanese, where a lot of these simple dishes come, they're one of the longest living populations on the planet, despite the fact that they smoke way more on average than other populations.
And the other thing I'll add too is that, you know, plant-based diets, although filled with nutrients, it can be difficult on the digestive system. You know, I know one bodybuilder, he was dieting, so his strategy was to eat a lot of low-calorie vegetables. And he told me he was eating approximately 7 to 8 pounds of vegetables a day. And within around 9 months, he couldn't digest anything. He had completely wrecked his digestive system. Of course, if you would have used mouse enzymes, he would have been fine. But the point is that, you know, cellulose is difficult to break down. The protein from plants are also difficult to break down. Even things like nuts can be difficult. So that's why even if you're eating a plant-based diet, unless it's raw and it's really pre-digested and all these things, using enzymes is smart. And that's why Wade's got no difficulty with breaking down anything.
And I'll add one other piece to that too, and particularly examining the Indian diet. And that is, there is a high, because a large percentage of Indians, I think they have the world's highest percentage of vegetarians, which have a unique thing. They eat an incredible amount of dairy products and an incredible amount of gluten-filled products. The bread is amazing. The cheese dishes are amazing. But those contain a lot of inflammatory-based proteins. And I know that watching your programs and seeing your site, how you talk about having an anti-inflammatory diet. And this is a big issue for a lot of people. And that led us to develop a specific product called Gluten Guardian, which deals with those specifics on inflammation. And so people who have been suffering from gluten intolerance or dairy intolerance and things like that, we cultivate a product that people just absolutely love on that in regards to those specifics.
And one last tip too, as far as dairy goes, is just avoid the cow milks and the cow cheeses, because, you know, the A1 protein is the problem and the culprit in most cases. Mm-hmm. I personally switch from, you know, normal cheeses to goat cheese, for an example. I have zero digestive issues with goat cheese. So I think a lot of times it's the A1 protein that's causing digestive issues, not just the lactose, which has been blame primarily, but you know, the A1 protein is very problematic for most people, which is found in cows.
I want to ask you a question as well. I'm seeing a popular movement with a carnivore diet, and I want to go back to the initial question that I just asked before. Do you think that and there seems to be a people getting healthier from their autoimmune issues and other metabolic disorders by just consuming a meat-based diet for a period of time? Does that come back to, again, the body not having to deal with breaking down too many different types of food? How do you see this? Because obviously you must be seeing this gaining popularity at the moment. I'm still not sure why it's working. And from a gut point of view, what's your opinion on that? And why do you see that this is working for some people out there at the moment?
Yeah, I've been on and off keto. I'm on now, and I don't think I'm getting off. I mean, I'm cyclical keto, but on and off for 25 years. And even before this, the carnivore diet, quote unquote, got out, I would naturally do that for periods of time, especially when I wanted to lose body fat. I always found that I would lose more body fat. And yeah, you know, all I can say is from experience that it certainly – I've never had digestive issues. Like when I just eat meat, like ribeyes, New York steaks, you know, that kind of, you know, ground lamb, no digestive issues at all. Like it just feels clean. And I've done it for as long as 14 weeks straight. And I had no issues. I think, you know, if you start looking at some of the stuff that's coming out around lectins, you know, nightshade vegetables, you know, and genetics, if we get down into genetics, I think that that would answer a lot of your questions. And that's obviously a very individual thing. But Wade and I have a friend of ours who's a nutrigenomic expert, which means she can look at your genetics and find mutations that would say, hey, if you eat these types of foods, you're probably going to have an issue. So I think that that field of study, nutrigenomics, and starting to understand which foods to avoid, which foods that you can deal with, is very, very exciting to me. The other thing, too, is I believe that a lot of the foods we eat growing up build the bacteria in our guts that allow us to digest it. So I live in Panama. Mm-hmm. And for a while, I went hog wild on coconut oil because, you know, it's the healthy thing to do. And I was doing my blood work, and my blood work was saying something different. You know, my triglycerides, my cholesterol was out of whack. And then when I got into my genetics, I found that I don't really have the genetics to break that down. And of course, I didn't grow up with coconut oil. I grew up with potatoes and those kind of things. So I think that genetics and understanding how your body responds to certain foods is really where we're going. And when you start getting down to that level, the next level of health, I think, unlocks itself.
I want to add one little small piece to that too. And I do believe that, you know, prior to this, a few years ago, there was a big push about a decade ago into the raw food movement, for example. And so people were reporting similar results of what I'm seeing reported by people going to an all meat diet. And I actually did a raw food diet for about 2 years. And what I think in any restrictive diet, oftentimes there is a period of time where a person will get extraordinary benefits because of their removal of some foods out of the diet, and they get those benefits, their abilities to break it down, that sort of stuff. However, I think it's really important that people stay open-minded and flexible in their dietary, and preferably get a professional to kind of maybe look at their epigenetics or their inflammatory response inside the body. And for strategic parts of the year, yeah, go try one of these diets and do it for 4 weeks or 6 weeks and see what the results are, and then try another one and to cycle these different patterns, because traditionally we used to eat on a seasonal based diet. And since the advent of grocery stores and globalized transportation, oftentimes people are just eating the same foods all year round, where prior to that, we'd be eating foods based on what was available at the time. So think about it. In the wintertime, you'd probably be having more of a ketogenic diet. In the summertime, you'd probably be eating a lot more plants or fruits and vegetables. So these are going to be cyclical, I think. And I think there's benefits to that. And a lot of people mistake. I used to see a lot of people in the raw food diet, for example, they'd get all these benefits and then they would start running into degenerative based conditions over a period of sometimes years, or it would take for them to develop. So I think it's important, if you're really serious about it, to get an expert in your field to take a look at your diet and to monitor yourself and see what works for you. Because Matt and I, we have a company together. We've been best friends for years and we have to follow virtually opposite dietary strategies to get the most out of our dietary choices.
I love it. And I have heard a podcast with you two fellas before, and I find that fascinating. And that's why I wanted to have you on the podcast to talk about this. But let's talk about the mechanics of eating. We've talked about the digestion, but let's talk about actually chewing our food, because that seems to be something that a lot of people are not aware of how important it is. So can you talk to us about chewing your food?
Well, I think the first thing, and I always say, here's a little experiment I think everybody can start with to show about what I would say focused eating versus non-focused eating. Go to the movie theater, buy yourself a large popcorn, but don't eat it in the theater. Go out and sit on a park bench, not using your phone, not watching any screens, and sit there and try to eat the bag of popcorn. You're going to find it's pretty difficult. And the reason being is because now you're aware of actually what you're consuming and taking the time to consume it. You're not kind of being in a zombie zone watching the movie. Mm-hmm. And I think today in the modern world, a lot of people are watching screens. They're watching their phones. They're not paying attention to their eating. So they're gulping their food. They're eating more than they need. They're not actually feeling the satiety, taking the time to take the textures, the taste, the flavors. You know, I know you're a chef and you spend all this time cultivating something. You don't want someone looking in front of a screen as you just made this beautiful meal that you spent all day preparing. So I think that's the first step. And number two, I think the step is actually taking the time to consciously taste and chew your food by chewing it up properly, chewing it up thoroughly. That also prepares your body to understand of what is the food that I'm eating, what are the enzymes that are required to do it, and also getting it into a format that's small enough that's going to assist in the digestive process.
And what about the intention behind eating as well? What's your thoughts about that? Like that it is going to nourish us. How do you go about eating? Do you give it a second thought, or do you have intention there?
I do. I like to give a little bit of a gratitude prayer. You know, I've traveled around the world, and living in the Western culture as I have, I feel I won the birth lottery, and I feel really grateful that I have an abundance of food in my life. And I always give thanks to that. I give thanks to the people who prepared it and appreciation. And I think if you do anything with awareness and appreciation, it improves the experience. And I do believe now there's been some scientific literature that is actually demonstrating the benefits of a little bit of gratitude prayer before you actually consume your food, and its effect on your ability to digest it. Also, the way it changes your nervous system response, it gets you into a better nervous system state, and the ability to absorb and utilize that food that you're eating. You're going to enhance the flavor and enhance the utility of it.
Another great prayer too. I used to go to Japan quite a bit, and a prayer they do there is Harahachibu, which is basically a prayer asking for the wisdom to stop eating once you're 80% full. And I think that's a great prayer that a lot of people could benefit from. You know,
we don't do that prayer on our spike day.
I figured that.
We pray for the strength to eat more food.
So let's talk about another thing that obviously can be overlooked, and that's drinking water or any other beverage when you're consuming food. What does this do to our enzymes? And is it beneficial? Is there a formula for this? How do you recommend beverages with food?
Great question. And it's something I get all the time, and there's a misidentification out there, and I want to clarify that for your listeners. And that is, a lot of times people say, well, don't drink the food. It'll dilute the acids of your stomach. First off, the hydrochloric acid in your stomach is so acidic that you could probably drink a gallon of water. It's not going to dilute as far as the pH levels. Mm-hmm. That being said, what it will do is it'll dilute the amount of enzymes that you have available. So people are right that it's affecting their digestion. They're not able to digest their food as well if they're actually consuming water with their meal. And it's not because of the hydrochloric acid. It is because of it's diluting the enzymes inside your body. So that's the clarification there. I do believe, though, that most people would be benefited by having a glass of water maybe 15 to 20 minutes before, because proper hydration is a critical component into actually making enough hydrochloric acid inside the body so that that second stage of digestion, it's the third stage of digestion that starts to happen when the hydrochloric acid comes into the stomach, that is functioning properly because you're hydrated properly. And one of the things that we discovered long before we even got into enzymes is that almost every single client Matt and I had was in a chronic state of dehydration. And that has extremely deleterious effects on your ability to digest, absorb food, and also to remove the wastes.
So what I could talk about the enzymes that you're producing at the moment. So how do you take them, and what is the amount that you take, and why is this formula so beneficial for people? And is it for every person to take? Would you recommend taking enzymes, please?
Yeah, I think if you're over 35 years old, it's a very smart move to start consuming enzymes. And even if you're younger and you're consuming a lot of protein, like most athletes do, most people that work out do, it's very smart because you're just going to get more bang for your buck from the protein. Our formula has 17 different types of enzymes. Most of them, the majority, are protease. And it's a variety of different proteases which break down protein to aminos. And they work at different pH levels. So as the food is going from your stomach to your small intestine to your large intestine, it's getting different pH levels, and it's extracting the aminos as it's going along. And the other thing you can do with enzymes, which is we're talking about, and we find that it does clear up a lot of health issues for people, is doing a 90-day cycle of consuming our enzymes on an empty stomach twice a day. So you wake up, you take 10 capsules, you go out, do your day. And at the end of the day, before you go to bed, take another 10 capsules on an empty stomach with water. And what that does is when there's no food, these enzymes, especially the proteolytic ones, the protease, they will start cleaning the body. They will start going to the blood, breaking down old undigested proteins, which can create havoc. It'll start breaking down old undigested protein in the intestinal tract. And it just starts clearing up skin issues or, again, different health issues. So even on a fast, you know, Wade and I do a fair amount of fasting, and we find that when you take enzymes, the fast just works better. So with a typical meal, depending on the meal, I would say 3 to 5 capsules is enough. If you're really consuming a large steak or, as Wade does, 2-pound salads, then maybe, you know, 8 to 10 capsules will do it. But, you know, again, you feel there's almost nothing you can eat that will make you feel bloated with these enzymes, which is a different type of freedom. See, most people think that you eat a meal and you feel full, which really means you're feeling uncomfortable because you got so much food that's just laying around in your stomach. I mean, I grew up that way. You know, my parents still believe that to a certain level, and they think that's just normal. But when you start taking enzymes and you don't feel like that anymore, you realize that was not normal.
My question to you then is, well, actually, it's a statement, because I follow a paleo ancestral / cyclical ketogenic approach for the last 7 or 8 years. But at the same time, I also am a judge on a amateur cooking show. So I'm eating a lot of foods that I normally wouldn't eat. And over the last sort of 6 or 7 years since I've been following this approach, my wife has introduced me to enzymes as well. So I travel the country and the world when I am eating foods that I normally wouldn't eat, and I take a lot of enzymes, and I've noticed the benefits, and I'm grateful for this information to be out there as well. So thank you for that. And now I've got your enzymes, and I'm like, even last night I filmed an episode, and I think I probably had about 20 of your enzymes throughout the evening because I was trying all these different foods, and I've woken up today feeling fantastic. I feel bright and alert, which is great. So we've talked about enzymes. Let's talk about the hydrochloric acid, or HCl, because this is another supplement that you've brought out, and I want to understand why we should be supplementing, or who should be supplementing, with HCl.
Well, I want to qualify something. It's kind of ironic because I travel extensively, and on one of my trips to Asia, I had picked up some parasites. I talked to a naturopathic physician, Katrine, and she's like, "Yeah, you got some hitchhikers," is like what she says. And basically, I picked up some parasites. And she had told me earlier that, being in my 40s, she was telling me, "You know, Wade, you're probably not producing as much hydrochloric acid. Your body, you could benefit." And I'm like, "Hey, my digestion's awesome." You know, being a guy, I'm like, "I'm fine." But in this condition, she had advised me to actually take a very high dosage of hydrochloric acid to kill off these parasites. And I had never heard of that before. And so I did the research, and as she had directed me to, and I was like, "Wow, this actually is pretty effective methodology." So I took a high dosage, but what I did notice is I started to get leaner. I dropped about an inch on my waist by just adding hydrochloric acid. And I'm like, "Wow, this is really amazing." And so I started researching all the different brands of hydrochloric acid and getting, you know, that's what happens. You scratch your own itch and you get really into it. And then I shared my findings with Matt, and Matt started experimenting with hydrochloric acid and said, "Well, why don't we go off and make the best hydrochloric acid we possibly can, add some of our enzymes with it, bolster it with some of those bicarbonate buffers, because we know that a lot of people are deficient in minerals, so that we'd have a really balanced hydrochloric acid formulation." And that's what we did. And we added that to our kind of our digestive series. And basically, it's something you just take a cap or two after a meal. The people who really, really love it is people who are suffering from a lot of flatulence and people who have acid reflux. And people go, "What do you mean? How does that work?" And I'll explain that. Acid reflux is not caused by having too much acid inside the body, which is, I think, the biggest crime of humanity is that the medical industry is prescribing these proton pumps and these things to kind of block hydrochloric acid production. What happens as you get older, specifically, and this is starting to happen in younger people, is that when that third stage of digestion, when the hydrochloric acid starts coming into the stomach after, you know, that 30, 60 minutes we talked about the first, when it hits a certain level of hydrochloric acid, there's a little flap on the top of your stomach where the esophagus and the stomach meet. It's called the esophageal sphincter. And that sphincter closes when there's enough hydrochloric acid to break down the food. If there's not enough, mm-hmm. it stays open, and some of the acid that's present will splash up into the esophagus and cause this burning heartburn situation. Mm-hmm. So acid reflux is actually accelerated. The damaging components can be accelerated from using these prescription medications for a long period of time. And if you look at the literature, the medical community says that you should only be on a proton pump for 4 to 6 weeks, and then you need to get off it because of the contraindications and the long-term problems that can be developed and digestive-related illnesses. So the bottom line is the answer is to add hydrochloric acid just after you consumed your meal. And that will make sure that you have enough hydrochloric acid that you'll disinfect and not get the bugs inside your body, that you'll have an extra boost on your immune system, and you'll also be able to go through the proper pH ranges so that your body can fully break down the food that you're eating and activate and deactivate the enzymes in the various part of your digestive process. And we've added it to it. Not a lot of people are talking about hydrochloric acid, but I think it's going to be one of the go-to supplements over the next 5 years because people love it when they get on it.
Mm. And it's also why the whole apple cider vinegar craze has started too. I mean, that is the reason why it works is essentially gives the, as there's, we get older, we have less and less hydrochloric acid. So people that have that issue can supplement, I guess, with apple cider vinegar or hydrochloric acid, you know, That's your options.
Yeah, it's just not convenient to take a bottle of apple cider vinegar to your local five-star restaurant when you're having a meal, right? We just pull out a cap of HCL and nobody knows and you're feeling good and can have a great meal.
I got to introduce you to my friends down in Victoria. They make a gypsy tonic or fire tonic of apple cider vinegar with different spices. And I think it's sold around the world now. There's this husband and wife, beautiful couple, and it's called Hillbilly Fire Tonic. And I have a little swig.
Oh, I've had that.
I'll do the introduction, but I have a swig of that every time. And I actually use that basically for putting on my vegetables and also salad dressings. And it's absolutely amazing. And I'll get a couple of bottles sent over to you as well. He'd love to send them to you.
Yeah, it's a fantastic product, and it lives up to the branding.
Now, fellas, I want to talk about probiotics, because it's often a misunderstood area. And you mentioned it before quite eloquently. And I want to understand probiotics, because a lot of probiotics actually don't get into where they need to get into to do their work. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we've really got some cutting edge information to reveal here. There's some new gut tests that are really shedding light on this question. And one in particular that I've done and I've talked to the creator, Wade, and I walked with him last year at the Bulletproof Conference, is Viome by Naveen Jains. And as we were walking, he said, and my tests showed that, and I talked to Ben Greenfield, a good friend of mine, that there's basically no commercial probiotic or very, very, very little that colonize. And, you know, we knew about colonizers and transient strains many, many years ago as we were developing ours. And our strain is transient. We've always known that it comes in, it eliminates bad bacteria. And we'll give you a crazy experiment you can do. We don't suggest you do it, but it's possible in a minute. But ours is transient, which means it goes in 72 hours, it's out. What it does, it kills the bad bacteria, which is just as important as trying to put the good guys in. So again, the Viome test is really revealing. And it was just, I just read the other day, there was another group that did research last week. It came out and they found the same thing, that essentially, I think they tried 55 different strains and nothing colonized. So the point is that the whole probiotic movement, as we know it, is not really working. However, again, you can take our probiotics and eliminate the bad guys. And how do we know that works? Well, several people, myself included, my wife, have had brutal food poisoning traveling. You know, sometimes you just eat food that's got bad bacteria on it. Mm-hmm. And within 15 to 20 minutes of taking our probiotic, it's gone. It's gone every single time. It's never failed. And we're here in Los Angeles, and Gary Lineman from the Human Garage heard me share that. And he says, you know what? I'm going to try that. So he actually gave himself food poisoning just to test the products, and it worked. So I'm not suggesting anybody gives himself food poisoning to try it, but if it happens, at least you have a solution.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because a dear friend of mine called Dr. Libby, she did her PhD on children with autism and introduced probiotics in capsule form or tablet form. And the study showed that hardly anything was colonized in the stool samples or the gut microbiome of these children. But then they followed it up with another test where they incorporated sauerkraut, like real fermented vegetables, into these children's diet. And that's where they saw the colonization or the good bacteria start to manifest in these children. So how does that work? How does the sauerkraut or the fermented vegetables get through and do that? Can you explain that for us, please?
Yeah, I think what happens is you have to look at is in order for a culture to grow and sustain, it's going to need some sort of medium in order to feed off of. And a cabbage, for example, is a very difficult medium to break down in digestion. So by piggybacking a culture on a cabbage product, you have a higher likelihood that it's going to colonize. Same thing if you look at a lot of the cultures which have developed various types of fermented foods, whether it was the kefir products made by Bulgarian peasants, or was it the fermented miso products in Asia, et cetera. Oftentimes the medium is what allowed that to get a hold or to get traction, if you will, inside the digestive canal. So I think that's a very big part. A lot of modern probiotics use fillers and chemical agents as well. So there's a variety of issues of why people might not get the benefits on a typical probiotic. And that's why I think it's really important that people take well-researched premium strains if they're going to take something, or they use it in conjunction with a fermented food. Sometimes we suggest for people who have very compromised digestive systems to make a fermented coconut probiotic yogurt, where you put our P3OM probiotic formulation, you let it ferment up for a day or so in warmer temperatures, like with the coconut water, or blending it up, and then drink that formulation to get even enhanced benefits.
The other thing about our P3OM is it's that it's proteolytic, which means that it also breaks down protein. So it works very, very well with Masszymes. It works well by itself. And essentially, you're going to get more amino acids from the food than you would from traditional probiotics.
From my understanding, we know very little about how our microbiome works, but we know a lot more than we did a decade ago. Now, some people say that we have to be careful with probiotics, that we're not, depending on what's happening in the individual microbiome, that we're not adding too much of one and not enough of another, and that some people have different strains, and some probiotics or fermented foods can actually aggravate somebody's situation. So how does that work, and your take on it with something like your product?
I was actually talking with a lady this morning that has SIBO. And what happens with SIBO, it's basically bacterial overgrowth. And, you know, it seems to be a growing phenomenon. I've met several people that had that issue. So what happens there is, whether it's good bacteria or bad, there's just too much of it that's growing. And the first hack to actually fix that is to cut down on carbs and sugar. That's where keto is very helpful, because you can starve a lot of the bacteria and yeast and candida and mold. So just going, I mean, that's where a carnivore diet would probably be helpful for a lot of people. Mm. But our probiotic, again, being that it's kind of like a Navy SEAL that goes in and cleans house, will actually kill and eliminate a lot of the bad bacteria that's overgrown. And again, ours won't colonize. You won't have that issue. It'll go in, clean house, eliminate some bad guys, and alleviate some of the issue. So those are two solutions that I recommend for people that have overgrowth.
Do you take the probiotics on an empty stomach, or do you take them with food? What's the most beneficial, or just before going to bed?
Well, again, it goes back to the same protocol as with the enzymes. For digestive aid, you take them with the food. But if you're really trying to clean house, then on an empty stomach is best. So if somebody had SIBO, I would say, hey, take it. Take 5 capsules, empty stomach in the morning, 5 capsules at night, empty stomach, so that it can go in and work directly on the overgrowth. Because if you're taking it with food, it's going to basically break down the food.
Okay, gotcha. Diatomaceous earth, a lot of people talk about this as being good for the gut and basically cleans that out. Do you know much about it, and do you have an opinion on it?
Yeah, it's gained popularity probably over the last 5 years. And I know that there's a variety of people with particular genetics or with particular dietary needs that get a lot of benefit out of that product. In fact, my girlfriend was one of those persons who had a lot of digestive issues, including candida issues and a variety of things that we were able to clean up with the probiotics. But when we enlisted our naturopathic physician to kind of go in and look at the genetics and what was going on in methylation cycles and kind of these more advanced ways of looking at it, that product was very helpful for her, and she noticed the benefits. But, you know, again, I'm not a big fan of randomly shotgunning things because you heard it was good. I think, you know, getting a professional and picking some targeted stuff that's proven effective. And that's one of the things that we're really happy about with our probiotics, that it's a patented product. It's been proven in a scientific experimentation to actually work and be efficacious. And that's why we had a long history with the company. And again, even then, Matt and I, we still enlist professionals in our own life to give us the guidance that we feel will help us optimize the performance of our health.
Yeah, I think that's very important. And lastly, we've talked about digestion and from thinking about food to putting it in our mouth, chewing it, and what all that process happens. And I want to just talk about actually the last process of actually defecating and removing the waste product. And I've been using a squatting device over the last sort of 10 years now. And it's one of those little stools that you have by your toilet. I actually developed some a couple of years ago called the Healthy Stool that I released in Australia. And I would love to know your opinion about squatting as, I guess, the last resort or the last thing to do with digestion.
Yeah, well, this is actually maybe one of the most important topics. And although it wasn't popular to talk about this 5 or 10 years ago, thanks to podcasting, now people are comfortable talking about it, listening on their phones or on their computers. And I think it's really important. First and foremost, let's just look at the mechanics and physiology of squatting. That positions your colon in a natural way that opens up properly, and that your contractile ability of the smooth muscle that actually is involved in the contraction to force out the waste product out of your body, it's a much better place to do that with. Period. The second thing I think that people need to look at is the hydration levels. The drier that your stool is, the harder it is to come out. And so, again, going back to chronic dehydration, people just don't drink enough water on a consistent basis, or they're drinking water that dehydrates them or has chemical agents like chlorine and fluoride and all these sort of negative things that also have a negative effect on the microbiome. Third thing is getting your bacteria culture inside your body is 10% good, 10% bad, 80% opportunists. That's the microbiome. And your diet,
yep,
stress levels, you know, staring in front of blue screens all day long, all these things actually affect the ratio of that. And when you get a buildup of the bad guys over the good guys, what happens is that will actually affect not only your brain chemistry, but your ability to make muscle contractions inside your body, nervous system responses, whether you're in sympathetic or parasympathetic nervous response. And so what happens is a lot of people who have compromised systems, they find they drink a little bit more water, get a squatty potty, and start pounding some enzymes and probiotics regularly where they're breaking their food down properly. And you can bet that in about 30 days, you know, they're ready for Instagram photo worthy kind of results in the bathroom.
I don't know. Can you post that?
Well, I'm sure somebody is somewhere, right?
You can always put a couple of filters on it to make it look better. Right?
Yeah, yeah. You definitely want the enhanced version.
Fellas, I've loved picking your brain about digestion and how this works. And for anybody that wants to know more, they can go to your website, which I'll put the link up. And you've got courses and plans there and more information about how the enzymes and probiotics and HCL works and your gluten enzyme as well, or the enzyme that you take if you're eating gluten. But two more questions. Do you believe that most disease is caused from our inability to digest food, or we're digesting foods wrong?
Yes, I think the majority are. It's either, so I mean, there's two issues that come. It's either one, toxicity from the food, or toxicity from not breaking down the food, or deficiencies because they're not breaking down the nutrients into usable components, especially the amino acids. And again, if you just look at aging, you see it. You know, you see the muscle degeneration. You see people getting weaker. You see the toxicity build up, which again then cause other issues. So I think most of the core problems is either toxicity or nutrient deficiency.
Yeah, and I think it's also we're looking at these were, if you look back at the history books 70 or 80 years ago in nutrition books, these were called the diseases of civilization. Particularly the advent of a lot of oils that were used in cooking was over water. And then, of course, the variety of foods and then the chemical agents. And then there was another wave that happened with the use of like nitrogen-based compounds in the form of herbicides, pesticides, fungicides, which have a very damaging effect on our ability to break down foods, also the nutrient components of food. So all of these things, a lot of people are trying to point at one thing, but it's a cascade of things. And that's why optimizing and improving or supplementing with digestive aids makes so much sense in today's world. And we have literally 15 years and tens of thousands of clients around the world who swear by the process just from our company alone. And that's what we're really grateful. And that's why we're on a mission. And I did want to add, because you made a point, I want to get this in because we're going to do something special for your listeners. And that is we're going to give them access to some videos and some courses, or what we call the Awesome Health Course, called bioptimizers.com/recipes for life. So it's an easy term, and that will give them, that'll give them access. They can find out about the products. They can actually see in videos where I'll show these processes that we were talking about today, just as an added value, because I know that there's so many of your students and followers that are interested in this topic. And we're just on a mission to help as many people as possible. My life changed because of digestive health products. I've seen thousands of other people's lives, and we want to turn that into millions of people's lives.
Oh, gentlemen, congratulations. And I can only say that thank you very much. And our listeners will be very grateful, and we'll put up all that information. And I'd love to finish off with the podcast, basically getting away from food and digestion for a minute and talking to each of you individually, and for you to share one of your, I guess, ingredients for your recipe for life. That could be a philosophy, it could be something that you do every day, it could be something that you're passionate about that you would like to share with our listeners that can add some inspiration. What is it for each of you that you just can't do without and you want to share?
I'll start. For me, you know, it's really living life from a perspective of unconditional love, and how that shows up for me is one is having gratitude become the default. You know, for most of my life, I felt, you know, I didn't have enough, I wasn't enough, and I was always suffering as a result. So, you know, just loving life unconditionally as it is, appreciating actively the things I have, the people I have, the situations that I'm in, it just leads to a place of serenity. So for me, serenity is probably my most precious asset that I protect at all costs. And a big part of that is obviously health, but mostly it's a spiritual perspective or a mental attitude that makes that so. So that's, for me, is number one.
Beautiful.
And I think for myself, it's actually a twofold thing. So I'm going to cheat a little bit here and I'm going to squeeze two things in. And that is, one is having a meditative process. I've been doing meditation actively since 2000, so almost 20 years. And what that has done over the course of that time is there's all the mental benefits and the emotional benefits, but what it did, it opened me up in a way that kind of expanded my perspective on my own life and what that means. And it expands into seeing that we're all kind of extensions of each other. And that might sound, it sounds like a great idea in New Age, but through meditation, I actually was able to experience this on a daily basis, which sets up why we do what we do, or what I do, and that is to live a life of service. What I've found is if I have focused my day after I do my meditation on creating service within my family, within my friend network, and within my business activities, I just experience a lot of joy, a lot of sense of connection. And I think it's a great thing. And I get a lot of feedback from that service and positive reinforcement by the people who tell me that that's made a difference. So it becomes a self-fulfilling loop that I think a lot of people out there don't feel as happy because they get caught up in some of the social media stuff or thinking their life is not as good as somebody else's on their filters. But the reality is, if you get into service, you forget about all that stuff and you just get excited about what you can do today for somebody else, because ultimately it feeds your own happiness.
Absolutely beautiful. And gentlemen, I just want to take this time to say thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for your words today. Thank you for your knowledge, and thank you for your love. I just want to say we love you, and we congratulate you on your success. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about your amazing work in the future. So thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, you. Pete.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.